active battle on the
triangle. You don't know that.
You don't know that I'm not.
You have not yet started. Okay, but we might not need to frame
Hello, hello everybody. I want to welcome you all today, all of you speakers, debaters, teachers, parents, guests, friends, members of the Litterfix, judges, trustees, everyone here today to the grand final of the Litterfix Schools Debate Competition for 2024. This is the first year that this event has taken place across 2 days, across two different venues, and especially in one as grand as this. We'd all say that the Queen's lecture rooms are quite nice, and we might not, but I think this takes the biscuit on pretty much all of them. The chance to speak a storm is something that very, very few people get, but each of the speakers today very much have earned that right today. What we want today to show is that debating is more than just kind of an extracurricular, it's more than just a speech or an after-school club. It gives you the chance to have your voice heard on issues that matter and that are important, in a place where change really is possible. That's why we've brought you all here today, outside of your schools, outside of universities, so that things can be done with the skills that you've learned. The ability to debate, to put forth an argument, to defend that argument, is a valued and valuable skill, and one that will be on full display for all of you today with these 8 great speakers. It's interesting that my first real experience debating, I think Ms. Smith will remember this, was in 2019 outside of my own peer group at the Litterfix Schools Debating Competition. I remember debating on notions about voluntarism being an ethical wrong, things that made no sense to me as a 17-year-old. My very first speech as a Litterfix member was on this motion last year. It's been a real honour for me, coming from those 2 things, to be the Schools Convener this year and to widen this Schools Competitions event in a way like this. The 175th session of the Society this year, and this is the first time we've done something on this scale, and I'm very, very proud we've been able to do it. This year has been about laying the groundwork for the growth of this competition, but hopefully next year the competition will be bigger, more and more students can come and have the chance to speak and have their voices heard. Their voices are ones which cannot be ignored, should not be ignored, and today hopefully this builds the platform on which we can do that in the future. Now before I go on, I kind of want to just do a very few quick thank yous. It's like an Oscar speech next to it. I want to thank Daniel and the entire council for all of the help and support in making today possible. I really couldn't have done without any of them. To Daniel again, to Misha and Jack, sitting up the front for judging today and the last time, for all the work and the time they put into it. To Ella, our treasurer, who's sitting somewhere, for being so generous with the purse strings that we have in society and getting all of this kind of thing possible. To our trustees, some of them are here today, for all the help and support and guidance that they've given me. And speaking of Ella's fantastic money, to the Queen's Annual Fund, the Queen's Public Engagement, for helping us, specifically Stephen and Eileen, for believing in this project and offering all the support that makes this possible. I want to thank the events team and to Neil for organising the gallery and the tour earlier on, and to catering for the refreshments behind us. To Robbie Butler MLA, our sponsor, for sponsoring this event. He's a great friend of society many times and a champion of the voices of young people. We very much appreciate the work that he's done for us. To the teachers, Mr. Latimer, Ms. Smith and Ms. Reynolds, for supporting these students and being so generous with your time. I know it's a very busy period in schools with exams and everything else, but you've been hugely generous and helpful and supportive to me and your students in making this possible. And finally, to those students themselves, for your very clever, articulate, reasoned arguments the last time, and for the debate to come today, which I'm sure will be the same. Your commitment to this, at such a vital time in your school year, is hugely appreciated by all of us in the Litterfix. I wish you all the best today and in the future, and hopefully, maybe next year, some of you will join the Litterfix in September. But before we begin, I'd like to hand over to our sponsor, Robbie Butler, MLA, to say a few words.
Thank you. I'm not going to try and remember all those names. I'm a bit like Dory the fish and Finding Nemo. I just keep swimming. I've got like just the last couple of things in my head just to seem to sit there. Just want to welcome each and every one of you, particularly the students that are going to take part in the debate. I'm really looking forward to it. I've been told that it's going to be high quality. I encourage you to be robust and passionate. I've already listened to a quick prep from a couple of the students. I'm really looking forward to it. But it's a real honour to be able to sponsor this in Armadale. I didn't end up in this building until I was in the mid-40s. I had no idea who was up here and what they were doing. We weren't doing much at times, as you know. I'm sure today in the debate they're going to take some of that out. But thankfully we're in a much better space and it's good to be here. It's good that actually Stormont is operating again in terms of the parliamentary legislative side. And hopefully, perhaps I might even pick up on something that's shared today that I can take back into the chamber, not just for my party, but for the rest of those pesky MLAs in there that need to hear some of the ideas that our young people in Northern Ireland have. And I genuinely mean this when I say it. I've been a children and young people spokesperson for my party, the Ulster Unionist Party, for a number of years now. I'm also the education spokesperson. And it blows me away every single time I interact with the young people of Northern Ireland. They're absolutely fabulous at every single level. They were instrumental at helping us navigate through COVID, and some of the groups that grew out of that actually helped formulate some of the legislation that we brought through in the little window that we had to do legislation between 2020 and 2022. I hope this is the inaugural year for it to be in this venue. I hope next year, if it happens again, we're in the Senate chamber, which will be even better because it's much more like a debating chamber, and some of you guys might actually be back, and your legacy, I'm sure, will live on. So I'm going to sit down and get ready for the debate. I'm not sure if anybody's going to come up or you're going to kick it off, okay? So listen, you're very, very welcome. Work away in the photographs, guys. Enjoy your time here, and maybe in the future we might see a few of us actually in the benches in Stormont. But if you're going to join a party, join the UUP. You can get me on socials, okay? Thank you.
Thanks, Robbie, for everything you said that last bit. Either party, either side, whatever you want to do, join a party, doesn't have to be any of them, but do you have to judge. I'm going to kick off here very quickly and just go through the rules and the judging criteria. So as hopefully everyone here knows, today's motion is this House would abolish mandatory coalition. Each of the speeches will be 5 minutes long, with the first and last minute being protected time. At the end of the first minute of protected time and the start of the final minute of your speech will be signalled by the bell, which sounds like this. Lovely. Which means you can only give points of orders to people in the middle 5 minutes of those speeches. To raise a point of order, please raise your hand and say loudly and clearly, point of information on that point, or simply POI. Please keep them to no more than 10 seconds, and no barking, please, which means wait at least 15 seconds, 20 seconds after giving a POI to give another one. Once you've made your POI, you cannot go back and forth with the speaker. And POIs for this debate can only be asked by the competitors here and the one in the audience. If anybody needs to leave the room at any time, please do so quietly between the speeches. Do not leave or re-enter the room when the speaker is speaking, because it can be quite distracting from up here. And do remember that any noise from outside may travel, so whenever outside, please try and keep as quiet as you can to keep these people's focus and attention as they go through the speeches. Now, ordinarily, the last rule that we have in the Literific is no swearing. I'm going to hold that rule pretty firm today, but the problem is that whenever someone swears in the Literific, they usually find a bottle of wine or a bottle of port, and I feel like maybe the skills competition isn't the best thing to do. So we'll either find you, I don't know, bottle of Ribena or but just whatever you can do, please don't swear. Let's keep this as respectful and as light as we possibly can. The judging criteria, again, something that was all around from the last time. What we want to see is performance, so how you stand up and deliver your speech, how you deliver yourselves and hold yourselves and present your argument. Rhetoric, which is sort of the, what I call the English literature of the whole thing, just sort of the use of language, how you use metaphors and all these different presentational techniques. Try and make it as impressive a speech and convincing speech as you can. Your argument itself, so what you actually, you know, what you say within your speech, your arguments that for or against the abolition of mandatory coalition, how strong they are, how well they hold up against other arguments. Teamwork, so you're working in your teams of two for your schools, how you work together as a two across your team, across proposition and opposition, how you refer to each other and how your arguments as a whole thread between you, how those sort of interact and come together. And finally, your engagement. So this is where the important thing about POIs come in. Once you speak, we want to see you continuing to be involved throughout the debate, asking points of information, asking questions, trying to stay as engaged and involved as you possibly can to make this as dynamic and exciting an event as we possibly can. So, without further ado, I'd finally like to welcome our very first proposition speaker to open this debate.
Parties through a process known as de Hondt, also referred to as power sharing.
Brought in by the Good Friday Agreement signed on April 10th, 1998, this policy of power sharing was necessary at the time in order to bring people of Ireland a government, even if a fragile one. But times change, cultures grow, and we must grow with it, as must our leadership. The opposition would attempt to distort the facts, twisting a select few good moments over the course of a quarter century to portray its corporate executive as some kind of harmonious uniter, bringing together dysfunctional people to barbaric to maintain peace by the same means relied upon by the rest of the democratic world. They will attempt to paint over the fact that 10 out of its 26 years were spent suspended, and will portray the very people of this nation, its heart and soul, as some kind of problem mandatory coalition is somehow needed to fix. The opposition will no doubt discuss those good moments, those days in the sun, if you will. But unfortunately, here in Northern Ireland, it rains most days of the year. As such, allow me to introduce a few select examples of executive failures under mandatory coalition, which my second speaker may expand upon later. Firstly, Cash for Ash, or the RHI scandal. Renewable heat incentive sounds glamorous. That is until you realise that due to executive oversights under mandatory coalition, it took five years to uncover and ended up costing the public purse almost £500 million. A second example, that of gay marriage, which was debated five times before finally being voted in failure in 2013. However, it was not introduced at this time due to another unique Northern Irish policy known as the Petition for Concern, which was filed exclusively by the DUP. Due to this action, which was considered an abuse of power, this policy of Petition of Concern was itself modified. If we can modify one Northern Irish policy with minimal problems, then why can we not modify another Northern Irish policy? This policy of gay marriage, however, was introduced in 2020 after it was pushed through by Westminster. This was due to the fact that the Northern Irish executive failed to meet the 2019 deadline due to the fact that once again it was part of the 40% of its history during which it was not sitting. A final example is that of lack of a consistent official opposition, something which is not required within the Northern Irish system. And in the current state, only requires 8% minority of assembly seats in order to form this official opposition. This is the same problem recurring over and over again. It's not the people, it's not the culture, it is the government formed through mandatory coalition. Another example would be that of PTSD, a huge issue within Northern Ireland. But it is not an issue that is a huge issue within Northern Ireland. One can almost consider the Northern Irish government to be suffering of PTSD, going through hardship and pain. But when you start to heal, as someone who has struggled with PTSD myself, you come out the other side stronger, as will Northern Ireland. In conclusion, we, the proposition, would ask one simple task of this House. Look at the people to your left and right, even those sitting opposed to you. Do you consider them to be too hateful to offer forgiveness? Perhaps too idiotic to learn from the past? Too dangerous to be left unprotected from? Or do you look across and simply see people capable of love and forgiveness and learning from the past, beautiful, brilliant people, capable of change? The opposition may believe that we are not yet ready for such a change as a single, united government. But we, the proposition, have faith in our country. We have faith in our people. We only hope that, unlike the opposition, the good people of this House may also have faith in themselves. Thank you.
Thank you very much for a fantastic opening speech, and I'd now open the floor to the opposition, our first speaker, Matthew Sheehan.
Hello, to the people of the floor, the judges, and the people of the proposition. I would like to begin this by saying, contrary to what the proposition believes, I will not attempt to make the claim that mandatory coalition is perfect. I do not believe there's any perfect system of governance, but I do believe the mandatory coalition is the best for what we can currently manage in Northern Ireland. For one, there would be numerous issues with actually abolishing mandatory coalition, the first of which getting the necessary parties to agree to abolish mandatory coalition. The initial forming of the Good Friday Agreement took place 20 years after the initial proposing of mandatory coalition at Sunningsdale, and this was under duress from Margaret Thatcher threatening to withdraw funding to the military, which would have endangered the safety of the UUP themselves. This took so long that Sean Mallon, one of the negotiators for the Good Friday Agreement, referred to it as Sunningsdale for slow learners. In addition, it's been concluded by a study by the University of Liverpool that it would be necessary to hold a referendum in order to properly engage. Go ahead.
You mentioned that there will be an issue getting parties to agree, but would you not believe that due to the fact that we now have a Sinn Féin government, we've had like a balance of the two parties, and therefore, due to this mix of power, it would be a lot easier to get parties to agree to it, as both parties would be capable of getting both sides of the capable of getting power?
I do not believe this because our current parties have completely conflicting interests and opinions. But, as I was saying, it will be necessary to hold a public referendum, and the issue is, after the referendum of Brexit, after which it was concluded, most of the public did not fully know what Brexit was, it's been widely concluded that it needs to be made sure that the public has full knowledge of what they are voting for in any referendum. And getting that knowledge out in regards to mandatory coalition and its alternatives would be incredibly difficult. That aforementioned study by the University of Liverpool concluded that even those who considered themselves fairly well educated or knowledgeable on this topic had considerable gaps in their knowledge.
No.
Yeah. So anyway, but if we were to replace mandatory coalition, we would, in order to remain at least somewhat faithful to the Good Friday Agreement, as 70% of people currently want to, need to replace it with another form of coalition, voluntary coalition, which has two basic subsets, simple and qualified voluntary coalition. Simple voluntary coalition holds the very, very great weakness of potentially forming a one-party state, which has proven in Irish history to be detrimental to the peace and stability. And qualified mandatory coalition has the considerable issue of it requiring the parties to negotiate to an agreement prior to the forming of any electorate. The issue with that is the public expressed severe concerns with their governments with their leading parties being able to come to any reasonable agreement within a range of months after the election. Given that our government already has failed to exist for 40% of its lifespan, a system would require them to spend months not existing on top of any future issues that may arise would be detrimental to stability.
On that point?
Go ahead.
So you say that it will not work, but you rely on theory, when in actuality this system has not worked for the majority of its life. How can you ever value something as theoretically worse than something that has been proven to be horrible for this country?
You say it has proven to be horrible. I would counter that with the fact that mandatory coalition has presided over 26 years of relative peace for Ireland and stability. My friend Rhys and my colleague in the opposition will expand upon this later. But, in addition to that, for one moment, currently, in a system where they are forced to work together, our parties cannot, so why would we expect them to voluntarily work together? But, I digress. Yes. Some would argue that mandatory coalition may have the issue for lacking representation in spite of the fact that it is the only form of coalition that guarantees representation to all parties. But I digress. Whilst many of the voluntary coalition aides are theoretically sound, as you say, theory is often failing to be true to life. As the famous quote goes, the plan rarely survives first contact with the enemy. But I digress. This is not about politics. This argument is for the people.
dignity to the parties, and we will still have representation, which you seem to think will just disappear if we get rid of mandatory coalition. In fact, we will have representation because of our electoral system, because we have proportional representation, or PR. This produces voluntary coalitions, where people have chosen to have coalitions. People have the knowledge to have these coalitions. And it also offers seats to smaller parties. So this idea that we will just lose our representation is false. We will have representation, and it will be better because it will be functioning. And there's actually a link to functioning government and relative political stability. In 2002, in October, after there was allegations of IRA intelligence gathering within some Sinn Féin members, what did unions do? They crashed our government. What happened after RHI in 2017 with Martin McGuinness? He crashed our government. This is when we need our political leaders. We need people who have the knowledge to keep us politically stable. They leave. Whenever we are now in a cost of living crisis, for two of those years, we've had no government, so we cannot have our cost of living crisis alleviated and dealt with. It was suspended to protest the Northern Irish Protocol. Yes, that was their views, but also that led to more instability. That led to the protocol taking two more years to be dealt with when it could have been dealt with back then. This leads on to the reform bill. There was a recent SDLP reform bill who everyone voted for except from DUP and Sinn Féin. Why did they not vote for it? Because they do not want stability, as they claim. They want control and they want power. And that is what we lose with mandatory coalition. We lose the control of the people. We lose control of people having this over our country. Also, our political makeup has changed. 26 years ago, we were in a UUP-SDLP society, and this looked like it would be this for the foreseeable future, which was great because they agree most of the time. They're a lot closer on the political spectrum, both the Northern Irish one and the worldwide one, than the DUP and Sinn Féin. But DUP and Sinn Féin agree on just about 2% of things, which is why it doesn't work, which is why we need change, because our political parties do not agree. Yes, political parties never agree. But in this circumstance, we need more agreement, which we do not get because there is change, because political makeup changes, because society evolves.
What information?
Yes.
Would you not agree that voluntary coalition makes it possible for parties to be excluded completely from proceedings?
They won't be excluded because they are still in the government. They are still in the chamber. They are still there. They can still make their voice heard, which they get more from PR. And exclusion is, there's other systems that stop them from being excluded. And looking back at petitions of concern, they didn't work, they were flawed, and it led to abuse of power. And this is, and DUP and Sinn Féin are abusing their power with mandatory coalition. They're crashing our government time after time after time and leaving the people with nothing.
Information.
No, thank you. And yes, conflicting interests, which you've mentioned, is actually why mandatory coalition doesn't work. Everyone has conflicting interests, and with voluntary coalition, with a better form of government, this will work even better. Better. There's public concern. I would say I'm concerned about the state of our government when it's barely functioning. I mean, there was years I thought government's not functioning was normal when I was younger. Yes, I was about 10, but I was a fairly aware 10-year-old. I knew more about politics than your average 10-year-old because I was taught about that. But what this led to? Me thinking that that was normal. It's not normal for your government to not be able to function. It's not normal for us to not have representation. And yes, we have had relative peace, as was mentioned, but we have relative peace because of instability. We have relative peace because our politicians cannot agree, because we cannot have an executive form time after time. And that is why we need to abolish mandatory coalition, because it leads to our government failing, which leads to our systems failing, as we've seen time after time with the NHS and education, which fails the people of Northern Ireland and makes Northern Ireland a nation of failure. Is that what we want for our future? Thank you.
Opposition, distinguished judges, ladies and gentlemen. This mandate is essential for upholding the fragile peace and cooperation that we see in Northern Ireland today. The Good Friday Agreement was a masterful document that brought in a peace process that worked for all. Not one community benefited, all of them collectively. It did not exclude any community, it brought them all together. It brought an end to the seamlessly endless violence that plagued our streets for 30 years. A conflict that stunned any growth, development or possible prosperity that Northern Ireland could have experienced. And robbed a generation of the right to be undisturbed in their daily lives and unhindered. Easily, it brought the environment for easily influenced children to be roped into terrorist groups and hateful ideologies. A time that we are so glad that is behind us today. The Good Friday Peace Deal was a landmark and watershed moment which paved the path to a better province and the prosperity, well, the somewhat prosperity that we see today. It led to the development that we can experience today. One of the main components of this agreement was the establishment of a power sharing executive and therefore a mandatory coalition. This measure was instated to ensure that political parties in the province would cooperate with one another and equally come to conclusions. No one party or side can unilaterally decide the decision. We need a percentage of people from both political parties and all of the nationalists and the unionists to come to decide, because we need unionists and nationalists to decide on issues that affect the community as a whole. With voluntary coalition, I don't think this would be possible. It breeds factionalism. Coalitions would be formed around ethno-religious lines, not around what really benefits the community.
Point of information.
Right.
So you stated that this works for everyone, it benefits everybody, but I would ask you, how does a single veto for one party to collapse government in any way help the democratic people?
Well, a single veto, well, it's down to, don't ask everyone, you got me there, to be honest, but I couldn't answer that. One of the main components of this agreement was the establishment of a power-sharing executive and therefore a mandatory coalition. If the political leaders in our executive cannot get along, how do you expect the people to get along? They are our main symbol and our example that we are meant to follow from. If they cannot get along and come to conclusions and decisions together, we cannot expect the people to follow along. I believe that this settlement was a landmark in achieving peace and reconciliation between the two warring communities. The best example that we can see, and one of which I believe to be one of the abstract successes of the peace process, can be seen in the unlikely friendship of the late Reverend Ian Paisley and the late Martin McGuinness. These men came from two diametrically opposed positions in terms of political beliefs, but came to work together as First Minister and Deputy First Minister in 2007. These two men, who ended up being good close friends, talking to each other and visiting each other for dinner, used to absolutely hate each other and wing words at each other, terrorist, you're this, you're that, and they actually came together, something that I believe in voluntary coalitions would never be able to be achieved. As I mentioned earlier, factionalism would have been a big part to play in voluntary coalition.
Yeah.
Go on.
Would you not agree that there actually is still a factionalism, such as the DUP and the DUP, the only two parties he left to do with the Northern Ireland for a Gulf to Brexit?
Well, of course, yeah, there's split between parties, but I think it would have been exaggerated even more by voluntary coalitions. What I do mean by factionalism is oppositions and majority governments or minority governments would be formed around, as I said earlier, ethno-religious lines, and not lines built on benefiting the community as a whole. I do believe that especially these two men lay the groundwork for future politicians and even generations to can cooperate with the same unwavering determination as them. They genuinely did want to see the better of the whole people of Northern Ireland, not just one community. They soon became known as the Chuckle Brothers, which was again a far stretch from the hatred and name-calling displayed before. This drastic change in events would have never been possible under a system such as voluntary coalition, where they both would have been easily stabbing each other in the back and not looking to cooperate with each other at all. I believe that it only would have fostered further division among the electorate. The proposition's claim that abolishing mandatory coalition is an effective way forward is ill-informed and irrational. Political decisions in this country are unilaterally made by members straddling across all communities, not by one major political party, and they certainly don't grow from the barrel of the gun. Members of the proposition, judges, ladies and gentlemen, I want to assure you that the very fabric of our sensitive political framework is reliant on mandatory coalition to breed healthy relationships and make decisions that positively impact the whole population. No one community should be able to gain advantage, whether it be through gerrymandering or favouritism. We want to create a better political landscape and place for our children, and not to return to the day gone by where violence made the decisions. Thank you.
I turn to Luke Coyle, who's going to continue the case before the night.
Mr. Chairperson, members of the opposition and members of the floor, today we sit in the very heart of Northern Irish democracy to debate a motion that, if carried, would kickstart a new era of democratic progression for the next generation. Make no mistake, ladies and gentlemen, although we have come on leaps and bounds from our bloody past, the job started by the Good Friday Agreement to once and for all democratise Northern Ireland is not yet done. We in the proposition know that the abolition of mandatory coalitions is integral to realising this dream. There are a multitude of angles to analyse here. I will focus on how mandatory coalitions have historically been an extremely cumbersome ideal, whilst also disparaging information on how it has divided our society into nationalist and unionist tribes. Whilst my colleague James will talk about the contemporary issues of the subject, as well as setting forth our plan for the steps after abolition.
What information?
Yes.
Do you not recognise, and the whole proposition, not recognise the tensions that could come from such sort of uprooting of the political system?
Well, I would say now that due to the growing condemnation, you look at Alliance that has a growing youth section, every one of them condemn and demand reform. We have to answer the voice of our young people, we have to answer for our society. But if you hear nothing else from our speeches today, ladies and gentlemen, hear this. Our country's democracy is dying. What we see now in this very building may be the last vestiges of life leaving the body. To wrench this country from the brink of collapse, to restore and improve upon our local democracy, we must cut out the root problem. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is mandatory coalitions. Firstly, we must look at the history of this archaic principle. Whilst it was originally established as a safeguard for the marginalised and disenfranchised, an honourable intention, no doubt, its track record tells us a story of perversion and corruption. As time and again, this safeguard has been used as the sword with which the enemies of democracy have felled Stormont. Currently, Stormont sits in its sixth mandate, but mandates 1, 4 and 5 have all been affected with major disruption due to the abuse of this rule. Ladies and gentlemen, if the intention of this rule, like the opposition has said, is truly to unify, then it has absolutely failed, as in practice it has been used to deny Northern Ireland democracy. I ask you now, as my friend Emer has alluded to, what matters more to Northern Ireland, to its people? Some idealistic principle, or an executive that wishes to work for them, and one that will never back out? This leads me on to the next problem. In the next election, many of us here will vote. Granted, we may vote along lines of conflicting principle, but one ideal, one principle transcends all. The idea that when you and I cast our votes, we will help to shape our institutions and our future. The idea that all of us can have a say in democracy. Ladies and gentlemen, I am ashamed to tell you that more often than not, our votes have been used to defile that core idea, to hold a knife to the throat of local democracy and use it as a bargaining chip. Just 3 months ago, Northern Ireland was without a legislative assembly, all because the principle had yet again been desecrated. Every other party, bar one, wished to go into government, wished to act upon the democratic mandate which they were given, but they could not. The sheer fact that one party was able to deny not only their own democratic mandate, but the mandate of every other party by proxy, is abominable. I ask you now, how can we ever hope to gain the public's trust if this farcical principle still looms like a black cloud over our democracy? There is also the fact that a mandatory coalition all but guarantees that ministers will not be held responsible for their actions. Take the example of the RHI scandal. A minister made a blunder which cost the country millions, anywhere else in the UK, and they would have been flat out removed. But due to this horrifically outdated rule, the minister could not be removed. And Stormont was dragged through the mud because of this, because of one person's failure, and the other parties could do nothing about it. This provides a space for collective decisions to be made without collective consent. And if we are ever to dare to call Northern Ireland a full and true democracy, we must abolish this. We must eradicate this space. We must also talk about the fact that this principle does not actually de-escalate sectarian tensions in Northern Ireland, as the proposition would have you believe, but perpetuates them. It paints our issues as black or white, our system as green or orange, when in reality our society has moved past such abhorrent absolutism.
Indeed, the opposition here today has painted a picture that a forced coalition is somehow the best option, that it's democratic. But I would ask them, how can that be when alliance can never get into a First Minister post because of it? In conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, it is our duty to accept this motion, if not for ourselves, then for those who are yet to come, and for our forebears, to show that the hunger for democracy will never die, and the swift deliverance of it shall never be abated. Thank you for your time.
Speech, stabbed in the back, a knife to the throat, but the fact is that this violence that they're insinuating is quite ironic considering the 30 years of violence on our streets that the proposition's own motion will actively encourage and encourage a return to this. The idea that Northern Ireland is a normal country, is that we are just fine dandy now 26 years down the line, is frankly preposterous. We are not prepared for a move back into a standard one-size-fits-all democracy because we have history. The proposition would probably be wise to open up a history book and find out about the troubles that have scarred our nation for years. And even before this, violence throughout our country's past. And the fact is that we have only had relative peace in the last 25 or so years, and the proposition will most likely lead to an increase in violence. No thank you, no thank you. The proposition also insinuated that the people of Northern Ireland are barbaric, or at least are saying that we will say that. Preposterous once again. The certified fact-free allegations about the people of Northern Ireland from the proposition are frankly uncalled for, I would say, as a person of Northern Ireland. And calling Northern Ireland a failure is insulting to the people of Northern Ireland. Does the proposition really wish to insult the people of Northern Ireland? Yes, indeed.
Would you not agree that we are saying that we are, that the people of Northern Ireland are barbaric, as in that all that stops us from going back to violence is one thing of mandatory coalition?
Mandatory coalition is not the only thing that stops us from returning to violence. That would be, if that was the only thing that stopped violence, then every country in the world that had any violence would have mandatory coalition. Northern Ireland is a special case in terms of our history. I'm not going to delve too deeply into the history of Northern Ireland, but the fact is we are a special case and we require, therefore, special treatment. I've already mostly touched on the lead to violence, but the fact is that it is too much too soon. Just 25 years after 26 years after the instatement of the Belfast Agreement, to try and change this soon, after just 26 years of it being in place, is reckless.
Point of information.
Yes, go ahead.
The Good Friday Agreement has already been changed in effect by the St Andrews Agreement, by the New Decade, New Approach, and the Fresh Start proposals. So what's the problem with doing it now?
The problem with doing it now with this specific motion the proposition is putting forward is that this is a much bigger, sweeping change that would change the entire nature of the Good Friday Agreement and everything about it. And this is clearly a slippery slope in terms of other major aspects of the Good Friday Agreement could be changed. PSNI quotas, that sort of thing, could be changed. Like, it just leaves the whole document open. And obviously, everything should be revised, everything should be changed to reflect the changing nature of a country, but it is too much too soon to try and change the Good Friday Agreement to this big a level. No. And the fact is, which the proposition have continually seemed to deny, is that the public wants mandatory coalition. They say that it is the enemy of democracy, that we're trying to stifle democracy through having mandatory coalition, but this is false. This is completely and utterly false. No, thank you. In 1998, the Northern Ireland public voted with an overwhelming number of people coming out to vote, overwhelming in terms of any country, not just Northern Ireland, any democratic country without mandatory voting. And 71% of people voted in favor of the Good Friday Agreement. Now, obviously, this was in the backdrop of decades of extreme violence, but the fact remains that the people want this. The people want this. And in fact, a very recent petition put forward to the British government petition to change, to do exactly what the proposition wants to do, a petition to abolish mandatory coalition, which required 10,000 signatures to get even looked at by the MPs. I would ask you to, inside your head, guess how many signatures this petition got to the British government. The answer, you're probably thinking, is if it didn't come past, probably 5,000-6,000. The answer is 30 signatures. 30 people signed a petition to change this. 30 people, and not all of them were even from Northern Ireland. So the idea that this is the thing that the people want, that is the enemy of democracy. Democracy has spoken, the people have spoken, and the people want mandatory coalition because the people want peace. And at the end of the day, this is not about politics. This is about the people, what the people want, protecting the people of Northern Ireland now and into the future. So I ask everyone in this house, please vehemently oppose this motion set forward by the proposition and stand for the people. It's not about politics, it's about the people. Thank you very much.
But with that in mind, we move to our final speaker to close the case for the proposition to James Hirsch.
Well, friends, esteemed guests, and fellow citizens, I stand before you today to advocate for the abolition of the mandatory coalition system here in Stormont. We must not underestimate the utmost gravity of this issue, and I believe that my colleagues have certainly highlighted the failures of this system accurately and passionately. And so while the intentions behind this system were noble, aiming to foster inclusivity and stability in a deeply divided society, the reality is that it has become a genuine obstacle to progress and effective governance. First and foremost, this system has certainly proven itself, but proven itself, unfortunately, to be a failure. Fundamentally, this system does not work. Instead of acting like any other democratic system in the world, this model compels parties with vastly different ideological views and goals to work together. And of course, in 1998, there were logical reasons to support this, but times have changed. The fears that we had back then are not the same that we hold today. Long gone are the days of unionist domination of Stormont and, in James Craig's words, a Protestant Parliament and a Protestant state. A single designation has not held a majority of seats in the Assembly since 2016, and the growth of the non-sectarian Alliance Party in recent years, this most likely will not change anytime soon. The people of Northern Ireland want a system that works. And the fact that this executive has not operated for 40% of its existence is a tragedy and a disgrace.
More information?
Yes, exactly.
We should say that it's a testament to the success of the system that we have had we haven't had fighting in the streets for 100% of that time that it's been in action.
Absolutely not. I don't think we should compare ourselves to the violence and the conflict that we saw in the Troubles. I think we should indeed compare ourselves to what the world is like, and the world, I can tell you, is not like what we saw during the Troubles. But furthermore, this house is the house of pragmatism, one that seeks to be forward-thinking, innovative and progressive. The adoption of the ability to establish a voluntary coalition is a power that we believe to be necessary for this case to genuinely work. Yes.
Does the growth of third parties like Alliance not display the democratic landscape of mandatory coalition?
No, I don't think it does. I think the Alliance Party, there are multiple reasons for why people will support the Alliance Party, and I think it would be wrong to bring the mandatory coalition system as the main reason responsible for the growth of the Alliance Party. But furthermore, John F. Kennedy once said that he was an idealist without the illusions. We are not blind to the fact that the politics of this part of the island are still strongly along green and orange lines. However, it is inherently true that there is more that unites the people of this place than what divides it. A system with the effect of checks and balances, including certain votes that would require cross-community support and a weighted majority, would ensure the integrity of these institutions. And of course, this position is already supported by the fact that some of these measures have been adopted by this Parliament. Quite frankly, it is absurd to suggest that parties who are in fundamental conflict with each other should be forced, compelled, to sit alongside each other in government. Just look at the history of how the Northern Ireland Executive has operated, or more notably, how it hasn't. The divisions, even within the Executive, display the fractured nature of this system. From minister solo runs to Stormont's brawl in the hall, these failures are stark. And I would love to list them all, but I only have 5 minutes and not 5 days. It is true that the issues like the RHI scandal and the protocol have been used to justify the collapse of these institutions. However, it is this system that has facilitated these actions. And perhaps they have facilitated Ian Paisley and Martin McGuinness to come together and have dinner. But that does not cut NHS waiting lists. It does not put money in people's pockets. And it doesn't build any more infrastructure or schools. And so, perhaps we have been too harsh today, because mandatory coalition actually has done something quite unthinkable, actually. It has fulfilled its goal of bringing opposing sides together to unanimously concur that this system is unfit for purpose. From Jim Allister to Naomi Long to Micheál Martin, this system has brought them all into agreement, and that surely is remarkable. But by abolishing this system, we can pave the way for a more inclusive, accountable and effective form of governance that truly serves the purpose and interests of all citizens, regardless of their political affiliations or community backgrounds. Thank you.
And they're growing up together, and they don't really like each other, but they have to like each other, they have to work together because they are stuck in the same house. This is very familiar to me. I have a brother, and when we were younger, our opinions of each other were very harsh, to say the least. Short of hating each other, I think it's generous. But we've worked together over the past, whatever it is now, 14 years. We've worked together, our relationship has grown stronger, and I would say we now get along amicably. And I need you to think about the mandatory coalition system like this. We need to give it time. 26 years in a political system it's a fairly long time, but it clearly is not enough. A member of the DUP talked about political maturity. And political maturity is what is required for the voluntary coalition system that the proposition wish to come into place. At the time, it was necessary. It's a direct quote from the first speaker of the proposition, and it still is. The Northern Irish political system still, as I've just said, requires political maturity to grow and before any other system can be implemented. The proposition will have you believe that we consider the people of Northern Ireland to be hopeless and incapable, needing to be saved by us, of all people. And that is a ridiculous statement. We believe a voluntary coalition government would not serve a purpose to some of these people, which I'll touch on later in my speech. This system is flawed, the mandatory coalition system, according to the proposition. But what system isn't? And that's a common misconception about our argument. We are not trying to say that this system is perfect. Our heads are not in the clouds. Yes.
Would you not agree that you actually did just say that people are incompetent by comparing everyone to toddlers?
No, I compared the Northern Irish government, the Northern Irish executive, to toddlers, which, considering some of the actions which you've mentioned in the past, is not too far of a comparison, I might say. What system isn't flawed? The voluntary coalition system, I'm sure, has many, many, many flaws, which would become extremely clear, even now they're clear, and would become even more clear if it was brought into practice. Voluntary coalition will not magically change opinions, it will not change people's minds, and it will not solve every single problem that voluntary coalition has. No, we must listen to the people, as another speaker for the proposition said. Well, we have listened to the people, all 30 of them who signed that proposition, and it definitely is not a strong argument at all.
POA?
Yes.
Is it not true that the parties that the people have elected that all of them who have representation as dormant have called for reform of the mandatory coalition system.
Yes, I do accept that. However, this is a petition and 30 people signed it. So that is actually directly from the people. In 2022, people will be able to respond. That's one very nicely, thank you. Which was at the absolute height of the last sort of crisis in Stormont, where we were out of government, everyone was sort of panicking, and this petition was there. If anyone wanted mandatory coalition to go, they would have said that. Yeah. And 30 people did, no thank you. Such sweeping reform of the Belfast Agreement and the Good Friday Agreement, which has kept this country safe and played a massive role in keeping this country safe for the most part of 26 years, is not imminently realistic. Now, we're not saying that this system has to be in place forever. We have to be in this rut till the end of time. But as I have said, I feel like I'm repeating myself, until we gain political maturity, the parties gain political maturity, it simply cannot happen.
Hereway.
Yes.
Well, we've had this style for 30 years now. If it was ever going to happen, now is the time. We can't afford any more stagnation.
That's a fair point. I still think there is time, though. I still think the fact that the government is still breaking up shows that political maturity does still need developing. I'll bring you back to my toddler analogy if you really, really want me to. The toddlers still need to grow. They're probably teenagers at this point, I'd say. So they need to move on a bit, go to university or whatever. Definitely bring it to them 4 hours. Anyway, it's not about the politics. It's about the people. It's about saving them from the political tensions and uprooting uproar that such an uprooting of this political system at the minute could bring. Even on the tour, for everyone who was on the tour, it was very kindly provided to us by the Stormont staff, thank you very much. The tour guide actually said, now, we have a mandatory coalition system here. A voluntary coalition system here is not possible. I'd like you to think about that for a minute. The tour guide says it's not possible, and it's perfect. It is not possible at this time. I want you to think one more time about the tour. Is that happening?
Yeah.
I'd like to reiterate one more time. It's not about the politicians. It's not about the politics. It is about the people. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Seamus. Indeed, thank you to all eight of you. I think all of them deserve another massive round of applause. Well, it was a fantastic experience. I think when I look back on my first debate in the Liberal for this time last year, when I debated on this motion about abolishing the mandatory coalition, we said an awful lot of things. I don't think at any point we mentioned anything about toddlers or nighttime or the great, the people have spoken, sort of rhetoric that we had there today. I really, really enjoyed that debate an awful lot. I hope everyone else did as well. I think the ground was covered very, very well. An awful lot of great points were made, a lot of great rebuttal and argument, and indeed rhetoric as well. I'm going to invite the judges now to take a few minutes to go outside and deliberate and come back to their conclusions as to who the winners are. So if you all want to take a few minutes, take a breather, get back to everyone, see how you're getting on, and we'll get back to you in a few minutes with the winners. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you for your patience while they're waiting while the judges were deliberating. Before I announce the winners, I'm going to celebrate and see what happens next. I'm going to invite our president, Daniel Toft, up to say a few quick words before we launch.
Hi folks, and firstly, thank you for coming out this afternoon to debate Stormont. First, can I start by congratulating every single speaker who spoke. They all spoke absolutely amazingly. The arguments, the rhetoric, the presentation, the teamwork and the engagement was fantastic, and it has been so hard to stand at the back with the other judges and find winners. But we now will know who the winners are, and Tom will be announcing that shortly. I'd like to just start by contextualising the schools competition. I'll only be brief. The schools competition of the Lidorific and the university has got its roots in the 1950s. So in the 1950s and 60s, the councils at the time of the Litterific, they started the schools competition, and even when the Litterific and debating at Queen's was at its rockiest moment, it hasn't all been plain sailing since 1850, even when we were at the rockiest moment, the schools competition was the one event the Litterific did year after year after year, through all the drama of the society and the university, it stood the test of time. But then last year, when the council was elected, we limited resources, we put together a new schools competition. It was Tom and his immediate predecessor who worked on that. And that was more Belfast based, as some of you will remember. So this year, coming into this year's competition, we had a very strong emphasis on making sure that schools right across Northern Ireland were able to take part. That the event wasn't just a one-day thing. There was, you know, the semi-finals, which you all had at Queen's the other week, and then the big grand final here at Stormont today in the fantastic setting. And can I just thank Robbie Butler MLA for allowing us to use the room. It's an absolutely fantastic venue, so thank you very much, Robbie. Just to do a few more thanks. So I first and foremost like to thank my colleague Tom, who is the schools convener of the 175th session of the Society, who has led the schools competition from being refounded to us being all sat here today, worked tirelessly, produced the fantastic handouts that are at the front and that schools right across Northern Ireland have received, has visited schools to offer training workshops, and has run this competition amazingly. So thank you very much, Tom, and congratulations on such a fantastic competition. In being a competition for everyone in Northern Ireland rather than just being Belfast based, this was only possible because of the generous funding and grants we received from the Queen's Annual Fund. The Annual Fund is a fund in the university which alumni and philanthropists donate to, and then they distribute the money to projects just like ours, but countless other projects right across Queen's, in order to let them be as big as we've had it today, allow us to have the resources and the logistics in order to run such a great competition. So I'd like to thank everyone at the Annual Fund, particularly Stephen, who's with us here today, for his support of the Litterific and our competition. So thank you very much, Stephen. Finally, I'd like to turn to both our council members here today and our trustees who have joined us today. Both the council and the trust of the society work hand in hand on delivering things like this, but also our wider programme of events and engagements through the year, which really assist the personal development of both pupils from secondary schools here in Northern Ireland, but also our own members who we seek to equip with public speaking, debating skills, but also the experiences, networks and connections that they can take with them to later life. So thank you to the council, and thank you to our fantastic board of trustees for your help, participation and attendance today. And just finally, before I pass to Thomas, just to make some final remarks, Litterific has had a long history. 174 and a half years old, we were the oldest student society at Queen's, founded by six original members. We began as an academic paper reading society and quickly transitioned into debating, both internally but also alongside politicians and notable guests. Our schools competition, other external competitions and our charity work has gone on ever since. We've been ahead of our time on topical motions before the House. We debated the use of the atomic bomb 2 months after it was used in World War II. We debated the NHS only weeks before it was introduced across the UK. We had a significant role in being the training ground for many of the main faces you saw in the civil rights movement in Northern Ireland. A lot of them started off in the Litterific and honed their public speaking skills, which went on to bear the fruits of the civil rights movement. We've been historically ahead of our time on the big issues of the day: women's rights, civil rights, free speech in a divided society. 174 years of history, still a lot more work to do, but thank you all for coming out this afternoon. Thank you, Tom. I'm going to hand back over to Tom to announce the winners of the schools competition on the 175th session of the Queen's University of Belfast Literary and Scientific Society.
expensive and heavy. I don't want to break them. All right, thank you, Daniel, for those very, very kind and unnecessary words, but I appreciate it. I want to echo the sentiments, though, of the debate that we had today. I think it always could be as a fair masterclass in discourse and debate. I'm very, very happy that I could facilitate it today, and very happy for all of you to have come, all of you to have seen it, and for all of you to have taken part. Without further ado, this year we have a team winner, an individual winner. That's why he's only carrying three trophies, very delicately just now. So firstly, I will announce the team winners, and I'm delighted to say that this year's team winners for the Litterific Schools Debate Competition 2024 is Luke Coyle and James Turrish from St. Colin's College. Schools Competition 2024 today in the Long Gallery in Stormont is Methodist College Belfast Senior Alum. Congratulations to three of you, and indeed to everybody for coming out today and giving really a fantastic debate for all of us to witness. I had a really, really great day. I hope you all enjoyed it too. My final thanks again to all of you for speaking, all of you for coming. For my judges, for the judging, for our funders, to Robbie Butler, to all of our guests, teachers and friends who came to the Long Gallery today. I hope you all had a great day, I know I did. And I hope to see you all again very, very soon. Thank you very much.